Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Hump Day Edition, it feels so good to have a good day, right? It was nearly a perfect day, nearly a perfect day. It's difficult for us to have everything, but Tuesday was a great day for Mississippi State. It feels so good to win, right? It's true. Bulldogs pick up a huge win in men's basketball. Of course, a huge football commitment and a difficult loss. Very frustrating game down in Southern Miss. We're going to break it all down for you today. Look ahead to what else is coming this week. Also had a one-on-one interview with Missouri State head coach Joey Hawkins. You can read what Coach Hawkins had to say if you're a VIP subscriber to jeanspage.com. You certainly should be. Last week, our subscribers got an exclusive interview with Coach Rosen, Stephen Rosen, from Manhattan. So this week, we had to double up, and we get Coach Hawkins from Missouri State. And so we'll break down some of the things he had to say, kind of look ahead to the weekend, kind of get a little bit of a preview into the weekend. We'll break those guys down in their totality on Friday, on the Friday morning show. We'll do our best to get that done either Thursday night or Friday morning. The first pitch is currently scheduled for 4, but I'm a little weather aware. You know, I'm not opposed to the Chris Lamano special, considering how cold it is supposed to be Friday evening. I look forward to baseball season all year, but February baseball is a bit of a grind, right? Not exactly hitter's weather, shall we say. Makes for a tough hitting day, you know, with these colder temperatures. But, you know, we live in the South, you know, so we can't complain too much. The folks at Missouri State dealing with a snowstorm up there. I got some precious pictures of my grandgirls earlier playing in the Northwest Arkansas saw snow. So that's a bit of a bonus there. But cool top 10 list for you today. And I had something else lined up, and this morning I discovered something. So I thought, hey, let me ruminate on this a little bit. Yeah, but good day for State. And I can't say it enough. One of the things about these big wins in men's basketball, one of the reasons we enjoy them so much is it validates our own feelings about the team. We felt like this team was capable of some pretty special things. You get back-to-back top 20 wins, you knock off a top 10 team, and let me just go ahead and get out in front of this. For those of you being critical of us rushing the court, please stop. Please stop. You say, oh, it's just A&M, the number 7 team in the country. And not to mention, how many times this year have we had that golden opportunity, you know, to knock off a, you know, a top 10 type team? You know, we had Kentucky that came in. We had Alabama that came in. We had Florida that came in. And we just felt like, you know what, let's go rush the court. Listen, I'm not a rush the court guy, but I like fun. And considering how loyal our students have been to pack out their section this year, they absolutely enjoy the opportunity to rush the floor when their team, our team, gets a big win like that. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to listen to any lectures from Ole Miss fans on how we're supposed to act ever, but especially in a year that we've swept them in men's basketball. So their opinion is of no consequence to us. And I'm going to ask that you not entertain that commentary on social media, because we are who we are and we don't really care who they are. So again, there's no need to have this get off of my lawn mentality. For all of you students that rushed the floor and got selfies and snaps and all that kind of stuff, hey, good for you. Good for you, because you guys and gals are the lifeblood of our fan base. You are the future donors. There will be people within your midst that will be donating money to Mississippi State. You'll have names on buildings when your time comes. And this is going to be a moment that you'll always remember, the time that you got to rush the floor at Humphrey Coliseum when Mississippi State, in a pretty special year, right? We're about to be in a situation, we're going to go to the NCAA tournament for the third consecutive year. That's rarefied air in these parts. So if we want to show a little exuberance about that, then you'll forgive us, okay? So for any of you students out there, don't feel the least bit guilty about that. Don't let anybody give you any grief about it. Your good friend and host has your back. And if I hadn't been down in Hattiesburg covering baseball, I may have been on the floor with you. Yeah, it felt so good as we're covering that baseball game to kind of keep up with it. I mean, Big E, Everett Kennard's down to my right. I got Robbie Falk to my left and Jacob Bain. We're all kind of like watching this thing unfold. And those last several minutes were pretty fun. You know, it's like, hey, here we are. Claudel Harris is going off. And we're going to break a lot of that down in the first segment of the show. But, yeah, even though we're down there covering baseball, trust me, we are we're in tune with what else is happening around the Mississippi State world. And we were cheering right along with all of you. And when I began to get those reports that the students are rushing the floor, there was a part of me that was very proud of you guys. But more importantly, just proud of Mississippi State. You know, this is one that we have needed for some time. And again, it just kind of validates our own belief. We felt like, hey, we're a really good team this year. And we knew even when we had a very difficult part of the schedule, it was like, man, if we can navigate through this and pick up a big win somewhere, it'd be great for us. We didn't do it. And then we get ready to head to Oxford and everybody's like, oh, we're going to get killed. It's like we'd already given up on the season. We go win in Oxford. We come back home. We felt like it would be a great opportunity for us. As I said on Monday's show, I picked State to win the game. It was a much bigger margin than I expected. Knew it was a good matchup for us. Knew it was one of those situations where I just didn't think that their strengths amplified our weaknesses. They were not a good perimeter shooting team, and that became a real issue last night. So, again, congratulations to everybody involved with Mississippi State men's basketball. And congratulations to all of you that love Mississippi State and were so supportive. And for those of you that are on the fence, we welcome you back. You'll get back on the bandwagon, okay? Sports are supposed to be fun. And that's one of the things that I deal with all the time in my career is, you know, dealing with people that get a little bit over-emotional when things go poorly. And so when something goes well for us, yes, it is okay to be emotional in a very positive way. It's all part of it. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I plan to enjoy some Bulldog Burger Company tomorrow. That's the plan. Hopefully the wife agrees. But I'm excited about it. Not exactly sure what I'm going to order, though. You know, I'm kind of keeping my options open. One thing I know for sure, I'm going to get those spring rolls because your boy's been tired here as of late. I could use the pick-me-up. Right? I could use a little bump. I could get my beauty care regimen to the next level, right? That's the important part of it, man. They make you and everybody around you better looking. Don't sleep on the spring rolls. Have that great restaurant quality hamburger. Jacob Bang was telling me last night, we're passing down Hardy Street, and he goes, hey, is that place there kind of like Bulldog Burger Company? And I'm like, no, it's a little bit different. He goes, you know, I love Bulldog Burger Company, and he said, I always order the same thing. Which seems to be kind of a tunnel vision approach. But I was like, Jacob, what is it? He goes, well, I always get the Bulldog. He goes, I'm that kind of person. When I find something that's great and it works for me, I don't want to take a chance when I go. So I know I'm going to order what I like, what has already impressed me. So he is a Bulldog Burger, Bulldog aficionado. I like to kind of shake it up a little bit because I enjoy the diversity of the menu. You should too. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Stark Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. You get that chocolate shake, ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's break down this game. I've been looking forward to this. I really have. I have been looking forward to this. I started to record the show last night. It was already so late, though. We got back home after midnight, and, you know, that's the life and times of, an SEC sports writer. So we're not complaining, but I just said, you know what, I'm not going to do this justice by being a little bit sleepy, and woke up today and, you know, had some things already set up, had Coach Hawkins' interview set up for 9 a.m., you know, so your boy couldn't sleep in. And you had to go right to work. And before I even posted the Missouri State coaching interview, I said, I need to go ahead and do this Ben Davis story. Let's wrap up last night's coverage, and then we'll immediately go in and looking ahead to Missouri State, which is what your coaching staff and players are doing too. And next thing I know, you know, the day starts kind of going. I think we've already had about a dozen pieces of content already today at jeanspage.com. And you can take advantage. We're doing the first month for a buck right now. Yeah, $1. And look, it's March 9th. It's February 19th. That gets you into March 19th. So that gets you through or into SEC baseball play. And also to kind of the, you know, the stretch run here for men's and women's basketball. And we encourage you to be a part of that. Again, first month for new subscribers, $1. New and returning subscribers, first month, just $1. Yeah, how cool is that? All right, Mississippi State men's basketball now 19-7, and now 7-6 in the conference. And we talked about that before the Ole Miss game, is like how important it was for us to get to 8. To get to 8. Now here we are on the precipice of 8 and potentially 9. And if things go right, even 10. We talked about how important it was to get to 500 in this league with the value of this conference right now, and one of the more daunting years in the history of SEC basketball. As great as this league is, you know, finishing 500 or better is very significant. Very significant. And, of course, those road wins certainly help us too. And there's some people out there saying, you know, hey, if things go well for State, they could possibly rise as high as a 4 seed. I don't know that I go that far with it. But, yeah, I mean, to be somewhere 5-7, and I think all that's on the table. And now you begin to think about Oklahoma, you know, as well as we've played on the road as of late, you begin to think, you know what, hey, that's a winnable game. And so we'll get to the upcoming schedule once we get done with our breakdown here. But Bulldogs win 70-54. And you kind of felt like, you know, this is going to be a lower scoring game because both teams kind of prioritize defense. But offensively in that second half, you know, the dam just kind of burst. And State just kind of got after him. And man, Claudel got hot. And you look at this thing at the break, we're down one. And we always talk about the rock fight, right? That's what Chris Jans is kind of known for. It's going to be a rock fight. Well, we're game for that, right? Now, if we're going to have a three-point shooting competition, we might lose that. But if you want to get out here and push and shove and play good defense and get on the boards and kind of rebound and make this a half-court game, we're good with that. Texas A&M falls to 20-6 overall, 9-4 in the SEC. Bulldogs just two games behind them in the SEC standings. But, yeah, that second half, we pretty much did what we wanted to do. State outscores them by 17 in the second half. We talked about that earlier in the year. We kind of prided ourselves on being a second-half team, making the adjustments at the break, kind of figuring out how they're going to attack us, and then kind of adjusting to that. It didn't hurt that Hub comes out right out there and hits a three to give us the lead and get the crowd back up. And then, you know, Josh starts getting hot. And next thing you know, you look up and State's got a four-point lead. We trade a couple of three-point baskets. But it just kind of felt, you know, even down in Hattiesburg, just kind of monitoring this thing. It's like, you know what? We just got to knock down a few shots. And the effort that we're playing defensively and on the rebounding part of things, we got a real chance to win this game. And it just kind of felt that way. You know, I would say from about 10 minutes on, it felt like, you know what, State is going to win this game. It's just going to be a matter of what the final score is. I think many of you kind of felt the same way. And I think that's one of the reasons why there was just, you know, so much emotion that was wrapped up, because we have been so close so many times this year to that marquee home win. Of course, you pick up the big win on the road at Ole Miss, and we never want to undersell how important that is, not just because of the fact it's the rivalry game, but that's a top 20 opponent. Road wins over teams of that significance matter. And, you know, guys, with 9:35 to go, this thing is a four-point game. And then Sean Jones, a guy, again, we talk about him, he typically gets caught doing the right things, gets a steal, gets it out there to Hub, they foul, knock down the free throws. And from there, you know, it's like it felt like State never really looked back. You know, Anderson Garcia, former Bulldog, you know, did some decent things for them. It just never ever felt like that we were going to let them get into a rhythm. And then all of a sudden, the outside shots start falling for us, and we're able to kind of get the separation here. Of course, Claudel with the big one with 6:24 to go. It's still just a seven-point game then, you know. But he hits that three, and, you know, we work back through here, and we get a stop. Cam Matthews, I thought, really kind of exerted himself down there as well. You know, free throw shooting, still a little bit of an adventure for us. But, you know, again, A&M refused to go away here. But it's a six-point game, just a six-point game with 5:44 to go. And then it's kind of Claude O'Harris getting wild again. Hits the big three. It's like every time that they scored, we did what really good teams do, is we answered. We answered right back. We're getting Nwoko on the driving layup there. Pushes it out to double digits, and they hit a three, and then Claudel again answers. And so you look up, we just hit 4 minutes to go. Guys, it's an 11-point Mississippi State lead, and you could just see the fans were feeling it. Claudel misses a three and pulls a steal, and they end up fouling him. Makes one of two. It's a 12-point game now. We're approaching 3 minutes. They end up fouling Hubbard. You know, at this point, it just kind of begins to feel academic. You know, when Hubbard hit that three with 2:32 to go and State was up 15, the celebration really kind of began in earnest at Humphrey Coliseum. So, you know, super excited for this thing. And I think it's kind of fitting, too, that the game ends with Claudel Harris pulling down a rebound, and that we've needed him to have that bounce back game. He was big last night. He was absolutely big. So,
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply in-app only.
Look at the numbers here. You know, not a lot of scoring highlights for Texas A&M. They did have three scorers in double figures, but Zurich Phelps with 13 points leads the Aggie scoring output. He also had seven turnovers. The Aggies shoot 35.8% for the game. Much better proficiency in the first half. Shoot almost 43%, but we really locked them down in the second half. And, of course, when you begin to get separation, teams have to take more low percentage shots. They shoot just 28% from the field. Yeah, part of it, you know. And we talked about free throw shooting was not a strong point for them. They shot pretty close to their season average at 61.5%. Bulldogs, Josh Hubbard with 25. And you need your stars to shine brightest on the big stage. And then you need a complimentary score. Well, you got that last night. Hubb with 25. And then Claudio Harris pitches in 15. 4 of 8. From beyond the arc is one Claudel Harris Jr. RJ Melendez also with 10 points, and starting to see him kind of get going again. Keyshawn's kind of been, you know, the straw that stirs a drink. Nearly a double-double, 8 and 8 for him last night, 20 minutes of action. And, you know, kind of wondered, you know, how this would kind of work rotation-wise with their lineup. Sean Jones, season increase in minutes played. He puts in 24 minutes, knocks down a three for us. It's his only made basket, 1 of 4. But, again, probably our best on-the-ball defender. Riley Kugel has kind of been hot and cold with us. Had a good game against Ole Miss, not so much against A&M, just the 2 points there. But, you know, was able to facilitate just a little bit there. But, yeah, you feel good about – maybe you didn't even play your best game. But you beat a team that – and we talked about that a little bit. Nobody was really talking about A&M. It's kind of – they were flying under the radar a bit. But they had a number 7 next to their name. It's a game we needed to win. State shoots 43% from the floor throughout the game. Picked it up a little bit in the second half, shooting 46.2%. Bulldogs 36% from beyond the arc, 9 of 25. And then 85% free throws. Did a great job in the first half, 8 of 8, and then 9 of 12 in the second half. And it didn't boil down to a free throw shooting contest. But 22 points in the paint, 22 off turnovers. 26 off the bench, too. That was a, you know, it's significant. We pulled down 31 rebounds. They pulled down 38. So we get out-rebounded in the game. And some of that's offensive glass for them. They had 11 offensive rebounds. We only had five. And again, when you're missing as often as they are, there's going to be some rebounds to be had. So huge win for Mississippi State. And again, I think it just makes us feel like, you know what, we're starting to see the team that we hope to see. And I think some of that too is, was Texas A&M as good as Alabama or Kentucky? I would say probably not. But you know what? We're not going to diminish the quality of the opponent here when they were, what, 20-5 heading into this game and right there behind the leaders in SEC play. And again, this Saturday we go to Oklahoma. That's a game that we should expect to win. And then we go to Alabama on Tuesday. That's going to be interesting. And LSU comes in here and then Texas. And then you go to Arkansas. So now all of a sudden you start thinking about, okay, you know, what is conceivable when it comes to an SEC record? You're 7-6 now, you know, with a handful of games left to play, maybe a jumbo handful, you know, because we still got, it's more than the women's side. You got a handful of games that you feel like you win too. So let's just say here, just first blush, I expect to beat Oklahoma, right? That gets you to 8. I expect to lose at Alabama. It's just not a good matchup for us. LSU comes in here. That's a game we should win. You know, Josh Hubbard went off last year. Okay, that would get you to 9. Texas comes in here. That's probably going to be a little more difficult, but probably a game at State can win. That gets you to 10 SEC wins, and you got to go to Bud Walton. And you just never know what to expect when you go up there. You know, John Calipari, obviously, has had some success against us over the years. But you start working through this thing, and you start thinking, okay, there is not just a plausible way to get to 10, but a probable way to get to 10, right? And I think, again, the only sure loss that I see right now, and I think you all would agree, is, you know, probably that trip to Alabama. There have been some times that we've gone over there and scared them, but it's very difficult to go win at Coleman. But we'll have full coverage on Tuesday. David and Jacob both will make the trip over for us. And, I mean, there's a reason you play the game, right? You just never know how things are going to play out. Let's take a quick look at the SEC men's standings, too, and just kind of see how last night's action kind of impacted things. Auburn still with a game lead overall, 11-1 in the conference. They've won 2 in a row. Alabama's 10-2. Of course, they lost, you know, Auburn over the weekend. Florida now 10-3, and winners of 5 in a row. And you wonder, too, like with all the allegations against Todd Golden, I don't know if you're familiar with that, you know, the student newspaper broke that story, and then there ended up being an investigation, and they exonerated the coach. You know, there's some conspiracy theorists out there that would say, well, this is not correct. You know, I don't know all the details behind it, but I've got to wonder, you know, Florida has kind of gotten hot since Golden was cleared of all of that, and it makes me think that maybe perhaps they see new life and able to relax a little bit. When those allegations first came out, I began to think, you know what, there's no way. There's no way that this can continue. But apparently they did not find any merit to the accusations. And Florida now 23-3 overall, and really right there in the thick of things for some pretty important things. A&M fourth in the conference now, 9-4 just behind them. Still with a game to play is Missouri at 8-4, Tennessee 8-5, Ole Miss 8-5, and then their state right there at 7-6. State and Ole Miss 19-7 both overall, and State with 2 wins over them. Honestly, I think if it boils down to a 1-game differential, that State could get the more preferential seeding in the NCAA tournament, because I think in the end, number one, Ole Miss is not done losing, but also too, I think the way the net will work will give us an opportunity to be even or ahead of them. So I think the selection committee would defer for the Bulldogs. Both teams, I think, safely in. Kentucky now 6-6. That's probably a little bit of a surprise considering how they were playing earlier in the year. But it's interesting to see how, you know, Kentucky fans are kind of like Alabama fans in football. You know what I mean? It's like they just expect to always be good. And they typically have been. But you know, they had to get rid of Calipari. Now all of a sudden you look up, they're 500 in the league and could potentially have 10 losses in the regular season. Vanderbilt's 5-7. Texas 5-8, 16-10 overall. So again, that's a team coming to Starkville that you feel like you should get. And then you, that Arkansas game, they're 4-8, 15-10 overall. And if that one wasn't on the road, like if that was going to be in Starkville, I would pretty much say, hey, that's a game that we expect to win. It's just, maybe it's the old Bulldog in me and how many times that we've taken good and great teams to Arkansas and played Arkansas teams. Sometimes it have been great, other times not so great, and come home with a loss. Georgia 4-9, Oklahoma 3-10, and again, that's a team I expect to beat. But Oklahoma and LSU are tied for next to last in the conference, 3-10. The Tigers just 14-12 overall. Oklahoma 16-10. So again, both of those games are ones we expect to win. And how crazy is it to look up and see South Carolina at 0-13? You'd think at some point they'd pick somebody off, but they are 0-13. And, you know, it's interesting. 10-16, the only losing team in the conference. Absolutely dreadful away from home, too. 1-8 on the road. True road games. But again, at home, 8-7. And they've had a lot of near misses there, too. But again, some upward mobility is possible for Mississippi State. We just got to keep winning games. And it feels like, in some respects, that we've kind of gotten, you know, kind of the burden off our back a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like when you start dropping these close ball games, you start thinking, we just can't win those games. And so maybe the best way to avoid those is to go win by double digits like we did last night. So, again, extremely happy about kind of how things have played out. And real quickly here, you know, because I know at this time, like, everybody's doing a little scoreboard watching, right? That's just how it is, you know. Let's see, tonight, Wednesday the 19th. So you got Vanderbilt at Kentucky. That could be interesting. Arkansas is at Auburn. You got to like Tigers there, right? Alabama is at Missouri. And so if you're looking for an entertaining game, that's probably the one to watch. Alabama, Mizzou. And I think if you're Mississippi State here, you're probably rooting for Alabama. It's because of the fact that you want to continue to kind of move upwards, right? So the more losses they take, the better things are for you. And I think it's interesting, too. You know, Ole Miss, the midweek break, they'll be at Vanderbilt this weekend. And again, they're a game ahead of us. So we find a way to beat Oklahoma, and then somehow Vanderbilt can win at home and hold serve there at home against Ole Miss. You're dead even, you know, with Ole Miss, with just, again, a handful of games left to play and the schedule. And it's so interesting. Like, you know, you look so forward to this, and, like, once you get through Christmas – like the non-conference portion of the schedule, it just kind of drags along. But once we get into SEC play, it's like it goes by like an instant, right? It just that's how it seems. And I think a lot of it's because we understand the gravity of those games. It just means so much more, you know. So that's an important aspect of this thing too, is that, you know, you want to be playing meaningful basketball at the end of February. Mississippi State is playing meaningful basketball here at the end. And I think we really could go on a run here late and really begin to think about, okay, this is a team that is tournament ready. I don't think there's any question about it. Let's take a quick look at the net. And I know they don't always update this thing as quickly as they should. It's been updated through games for last night. Auburn, of course, number one in the net. Looking at other SEC teams, Florida is 4, Tennessee is 5, Alabama is 6. So 4 of the top 6 teams in the net, all from the SEC, which says a lot about how this conference should be viewed by the NCAA Selection Committee. We talked about Kentucky's 500 record. They're still 14 in the net. And so, again, you work through all this and begin to think, how many teams ahead of us in the net did we lose to, or did we defeat? Missouri's right there at 15. Texas A&M, after last night's loss, drops from 11 in the net to 16. And then there's Ole Miss at 24 in the net. They move up a spot. I'm not exactly sure who fell behind them. I guess it was maybe it was Clemson. Leading into last night, Mississippi State was 29 in the net. We're up to 26 in the net. And again, you know, at this point, safely in the tournament. 7-6 against the quad one. 4-1 against the quad two, and 2-0 quad three, and then 6-0 against quad four. So no bad losses for Mississippi State. Right? I mean, that's what you always want to avoid, or losing to those teams. You may lose a toss-up every now and again, maybe a game you're favored in, but you should never lose to an inferior opponent. And that's one of the things that Chris Jantz has been able to avoid this year. Again, 8-0 against quad three and four teams combined. And in our conference, when it is so deep, you know, just about every one of those SEC games, more times than not, is going to be a quad one opportunity. It's good, right? And so, again, we're going to celebrate where we are. We're going to be excited about where we could go. And we're not going to give our students any grief for rushing the floor, because we love them and we love Mississippi State. And I'm just going to tell you guys that are complaining about it, let's just loosen up a little bit. You know, get a Coke and a smile, man. Just relax a little bit. And there's a part of you, too, that maybe you're a little bit envious, you know, that maybe you couldn't rush the floor, right? Or maybe you thought, man, my wife's going to think I'm so silly for running out there. Just do it anyway, man. You only live once, right? But the videos that I have seen making the rounds on social media the last 24 hours, it just really kind of warms the heart, too, because we all love Mississippi State so much. And we want the best for Mississippi State. We may not always agree on how to get there, but we all want Mississippi State to win. So when we win, let's not begrudge the students for having a very special moment. And I can tell you guys something else, too. I saw some comments last night, too, about people complaining about the uniforms that we're wearing. I cannot begin to imagine something more insignificant than that. We beat a top 10 team, and you want to complain about the uniforms, about what we should wear and shouldn't wear? The number one thing that I would say, and because the one post that I saw first is like, why aren't we wearing maroon? Well, when you're the home team, you don't get to wear the dark jersey. That's the road team jersey in SEC play. I would think as a follower of college basketball, you'd know that, right? But at the end of the day, I don't care if they wear pinstripe tuxedos if they win. It makes no difference to me. And we are really working overtime to be miserable that we're going to, after a decisive victory over a top 10 opponent, to go complain about the uniforms. That is one of those things that I wish we could breed out of the fan base. I'm just telling you as it is. And if you're one of those people and you listen to this show and you get your feelings hurt, I'm good. Because you need to have your feelings hurt. Maybe you need to be offended. Of all the things to complain about. And that was the thing, too. It's like there are just so many killjoys out there that sometimes just want to suck the fun out of everything. It's like we win and we complain because the students rush the floor. And we complain about the uniforms that we're wearing. Can we just be happy? I mean, is that too difficult to ask? I'm so glad I'm not married to some of those people. Let's just be happy. Period. We've won. And again, our feelings about our team have been validated. Again, back-to-back, top 20 SEC games. And this is an NCAA tournament team. So let's get excited about that aspect of it. Because I think we work sometimes so hard. It's like we've become so comfortable being miserable that even in times of joy, we have to find something to complain about. And that's not a Mississippi State problem. That's a you problem. And I love you to death, man, but that dog just don't hunt with me. It just doesn't, nor should it. And I look at these NCAA tournament appearances. Do you know how many times in our history that we have gone to three consecutive NCAA tournaments? Do you know? Do you know? I suspect you don't. It has only happened one time in school history, and that's from 2002 to 2005. We made it four tournaments in a row. Of course, we win the SEC championship with the Road Warriors back, you know, in 04. But it's only happened one time ever. Why wouldn't we be excited? How many times in the last, say, 20 years have we just been irrelevant? And men's basketball. I mean, honestly. And do you remember the Rick Ray years? You know, at least Ben Howland got us to one NCAA tournament. And we lost a game we shouldn't, but I'm not going to chase that rabbit trail again. But my point being is that when we're experiencing something that has only happened one other time in the history of our program, why are we concerning ourselves with game wear and post-game celebrations? At least we have something to celebrate. All right, time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com, C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's been doing this 24 years. If they don't tell you this when you're young, you're going to need a seasoned mortgage loan originator to get you to the closing table, especially if you're a young person just kind of starting out, right? Because you're a bit of a risk. And, you know, maybe you're a person, too, that life's thrown you a curveball. Maybe you've had to go through a job change or a relationship change. And now you're kind of starting over in some respects. Or maybe, you know, you decided to move back closer to home due to the health of your parents, and you got to think about planting some roots here. And so let Blair Chandler do some of the heavy lifting for you. You know, that's something huge. He can just kind of take off your plate. You know, you send him your documentation, and he just kind of goes to work. And next thing you know, chances are you're going to be at a signing and get ready to move into your new home. How about that? His phone number is 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Get his 24 years of expertise working for you. There's no point in overthinking this and say, well, we need to shop around. No, you don't. Because generations of other shoppers have done the research for you, and their experiences and Blair's experiences share that he is the way to go. So visit closewithblair.com. All right, let's get into this. So I wanted to share this with you. I'm excited about this, and I know that opinions are mixed on this. It was announced a few days ago, I guess. I saw it last night, I think, and then this morning I did some research. They're going to release in, I think it's November, maybe? I think it's through Simon Schuster, too. But kind of the lost writings of Layne Staley, the lead singer from Alice in Chains. And that's some poems, that's some lyrical stuff. It's kind of some journaling and some art and things like that he did. And some people were like, well, this is just exploitive. I can't believe this is authorized by the estate. Well, it is. His mom released a statement that, yes, the family does support this. And it's not for them. It's for all of us. For those of us that love Layne Staley, would like to kind of know a little bit more. And some people are like, it would just be so horrified if somebody read my journals. Let me explain to you this. You would be dead. Okay? You wouldn't be here to have those. You wouldn't even know, right? So there's no need to have any embarrassment about that. And then some people suggested, well, this is just a cash grab by the family. Guys, do you know how many streams that Alice in Chains still gets a year? How many records they still sell? And that Layne Staley and the family, the Layne Staley estate still benefits from those record sales? Are you aware of that? They do not need the money. They do matter of fact, the Layne Staley Foundation puts on a concert every year to raise money for recovery centers in the greater Seattle area. All right, there's a lot of work that they do, and these people are not hurting for money. So I've read some comments about that. People are like, well, I just don't agree with this. Well, here's the thing. If you don't agree with it, then don't buy the book. I am going to buy the book. Matter of fact, probably tomorrow I'll go ahead and pre-order the book so I don't forget about it later. But yes, I would like to read those things because I love Alice in Chains. And one of the things that I think is kind of a bit of a misconception about Alice in Chains, everybody knows the album Dirt. I mean, it is, if you know early 90s rock music, Dirt, one of the classic albums, arguably the greatest grunge album of all time. Even though Alice in Chains didn't really like the grunge label, and they were established as a band before grunge kind of became a thing. I don't know who named it grunge. But nevertheless, of the early 90s hard rock bands, Alice in Chains was kind of a cut above. And a lot of that was because of Layne Staley. But on the Dirt album, Lane sang a lot of Jerry's lyrics. Like a lot of the songs that people know and they associate, oh, Lane's plight. He was singing Jerry songs. Now, Lane wrote some other songs. He did. And we're about to get into some of that. It's going to be our top 10 today. It's top 10 Alice in Chains songs written by Lane Staley. But everybody thinks about Wood and so many other things. But it wasn't just Lane who had the downward spiral. Jerry Cantrell, the guitar player, also was a very, very, very sick drug addict through all of this. And Jerry, now doing great work, very healthy, and is a legend in our minds and throughout the world over. But there's a lot of that people would say. I've read so much stuff. There's so many people on social media that are well-intended but not well-informed. And it's like, oh, you could see this coming. You don't know. He wrote this in this song, and Lane didn't write it. He just sang it. And if you go back, those of you that have the SAP EP, and a lot of Alice in Chains fans that are kind of casual fans don't understand that. So Facelift comes out. I'm in high school back then, right? And Man in a Box is everywhere, and people are like, holy smokes, this is something very different, right? And so that was really the first of the Seattle bands to really break through nationally. You know, and they went out on a tour with Van Halen. Yeah, and I've seen some interviews with Sammy Hagar in recent years where he talked about, you know, going out with those guys and how important that was. And he's like, hey, Alice in Chains kind of makes us cool to young kids that we take Van Halen out. Van Halen takes Alice in Chains out. Because Van Halen, of course, you hate to ever say they were fading, but they didn't have a lot of music that maybe stirred emotions in the younger audience. So they bring out Alice in Chains to kind of balance things out. And what a great tour that was, right? Alice in Chains' first national tour with Van Halen, an established band like that. It's incredible. And Jerry has spoke glowingly of his relationship with Eddie Van Halen and how they became such great friends because of this tour. But yeah, things began to kind of take off for them. And so I share that with you because I think it's important for people to kind of frame this thing up. There is this revisionist history about grunge, and I lived through it. And I can tell you that so much of what is shared online is factually incorrect. So, and you can ask those of us that lived through it, that actually paid attention, that lived in front of the MTV broadcast 24 hours a day. So here are my top 10 Alice in Chains songs written by Lane Staley. Oh, I forgot the point that I was trying to make. So after Facelift came out, Sap was written because they were trying to do a song for the single soundtrack. And those of you that know that, it's a great movie. It is. Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell have cameos in it. But Sap, that EP, is worth listening to. And there's one song on there that has Mark Longahan, Chris Cornell, and Lane Staley. It is the only studio recording of Chris and Lane singing together. And it's on the Sap EP. That was recorded in between Facelift and Dirt. And on that album, the song Brother was written by Jerry Cantrell to his brother. The parents get divorced. Jerry chooses to go with dad. The brother goes with mom. And so he writes this song basically to his brother about kind of growing up apart. And Lane encouraged Jerry to sing the lead on that song. So the very first time that Jerry sings lead is on Brother of the Sap EP. And that EP became kind of the writing sessions for Dirt. And so when you began to have the dual vocal in Dirt, it really all kind of stemmed from those recording sessions for Sap. So there you go, something you learned today. All right, top 10 songs. Number 10, off the Facelift album. I love this one. Lyrically, it's great. It's called Real Thing. And it's definitely written through the lens of addiction. And that's one of the things he talks about is, I grew up, went into rehab. You know, those doctors never did me no good. They said, son, you're going to be a new man. I said, thank you very much. Can I borrow $50? Number 9, the first single off the self-titled album, sometimes called Tripod. And it's a song, again, great one. Love it. Number 8, off of Jars of Flies, jar of flies, and I promise you, I have that tattoo on my left elbow. But I was a little bit reluctant when they announced they were doing an acoustic EP, and it really, again, kind of stems from the whole Sap thing. And they wanted to just kind of do this, and this is a song that I think is one of Lane Staley's best vocal performances. It's I Stay Away. All right, number seven, and we've talked about this a little bit on the show. The band Mad Season was basically put together by Mike McReady of Pearl Jam to save Lane Staley's life. That was the whole purpose behind it. You know, Lane was a hopeless drug addict, and Jerry Cantrell was out doing his solo stuff. Boggy Depot was the debut solo album from Jerry Cantrell. And so McReady and those guys were worried about Lane, so they put this project together and allowed Lane to do a lot of the writing. And probably the song that you all know from the Mad Season album. Some people say that album is a masterpiece. I actually disagree. I don't think it's very good. And I love all of those bands, but I think this collaboration had a few high points, but I don't think that by far it was a masterpiece. And I think that's one of the reasons that it didn't sell better. But it's the song River of Deceit from Mad Season. It's great. All right, number six, Back to Dirt. Love this one, man. And it's called Rain When I Die. I think it's going to rain when I die. And it's a very angry song. There's a lot of pain in this song, and that may resonate with you. Number five, a little different song off the Tripod album, or the self-titled album, whatever you would like to call it. I dig this one because it is so unique. It's Frogs. Most people wouldn't have this one on their list, but I do. And I think there is some majesty and magic in this song that is kind of unlike anything else in the catalog. Now, the rest of these I think you're going to know very well, whether you're a big Alice in Chains fan or not. But number four, Back to the Dirt album, it's Angry Chair. And Angry Chair, and I remember when this came out, the Angry Chair was basically kind of an homage to being on the hot seat in drug rehab. That's what they do. They put you in that chair, you know, sometimes in the middle of the room, and everybody tells you how fake you're being and all these things, and all you can do is just sit there and listen, you know. And so that's kind of where the genesis of this song comes from. And you can imagine, whether you're in recovery or not, sitting in a chair in the middle of a circle and everybody else telling you all these other things that you don't like. That's the genesis of that song. Number three, and I love this one. I absolutely love this one. I don't think that it gets enough respect, and I think that you guys should add it to your playlist. It's Get Born Again. Absolutely love it. So much great lyrical content. I think, and again, that whole haunting aspect of Lane Staley's voice is on full display here. All right, number two, I would be remiss if we didn't mention this one. And it made Jar of Flies 2. And it's kind of an incomplete song, but it is kind of a complete thought. They were wrapping up the sessions, and Lane had something they kind of wanted to demo. And they didn't have a chorus or anything like that. And it has become a fan favorite. And they still play it live, and the crowd sings along. It's Nutshell. And it is one of the loneliest songs that I think I've ever heard in my entire life. And, you know, we chase misprinted lies, right? And nothing could be more true today, you know. Basically, the reason it's called Nutshell is because it kind of encapsulated how Lane was feeling at that time. And it is a very poignant and painful song. And if I can't be my own, I'd be better dead. And after he passed away, the song kind of took on new meaning. Number one, and it's the gateway song that so many people had. It's Man in the Box. And little did you know, that was written by Lane Staley. But it was. And again, I feel a certain level of kinship with Lane because of our addictions. And obviously his was far worse than mine. And really, I think the reason for that is because he simply had access to more money. An addict with money is in bad company, for sure. And that's the thing, too. It's so sad how he died. You know, they noticed after, you know, several days that no money had been taken out of his account. He used to you know, order food and have it delivered and things like that. And all of a sudden, there were no charges to his debit account. And that's when people realized there was a problem. And they went over and found him dead, and he'd been there for several days. And it's a really sad story. But I think it's important to continue to tell the story as a cautionary tale to others that drug addiction and depression are no respecter of persons. And here is one of the more talented singers of our generation that pretty much had it all and then kind of flew a little too close to the sun. You know about his relationship with Demri Parrott, and she apparently was the love of his life. And they were both, you know, very promiscuous. And, you know, there was so many things about their relationship that didn't make a lot of sense, but they did love each other. And after she died of a heroin overdose, he was never the same. And I've read so many, you know, articles and have read the book about it. There is an unauthorized biography out there that I would encourage you not to read. But there's just so much of this that... you know, in hindsight, I think it's important for us to talk about, because the thing about drugs that nobody will tell you is the drugs will kill you. They will kill you. Everybody thinks it won't happen to them, but it will happen to you. And if it doesn't, you're one of the very lucky and fortunate ones. So if you were a person, you're like, Steve, I can handle it. That's what I thought too, until I was arrested and checked into rehab at 6'2", 146 pounds. I didn't even realize what bad shape I was in. I woke up after having an IV drip in my arm for a couple days, trying to keep me alive, keep me hydrated, and they were about to transfer me to ICU. You know, I share with people all the time. You know, I had to relocate, and it had nothing to really do with the company that I kept. It's just that I knew that I wasn't going to be able to stay away from those people. I knew that in time I would go right back. You keep going to the barbershop. Eventually, you get the haircut. I wouldn't have been able to stay out of there, and so I share that with you because I love each and every one of you. And if you have problems with chemical dependency or somebody in your family does, you feel free to reach out. You never know. I know a lot of people that could perhaps help you get into treatment, and we're happy to do that. We're happy to keep the miracle alive as best we can. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart. A Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. I have for a long time. If you're shopping for Mississippi State merchandise somewhere else, chances are you're not getting the selection you deserve or paying the amount of money that you probably should. You're probably paying too much. I encourage you, next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. You'll be glad you did. Probably going to need to bring a little extra pocket money with you too, because even though you may go there for one or two things, you're going to find several things that you want and you just have to have. Campus Bookmart, the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. A lot of people make that claim. They back it up. I encourage you to go by and see them. But if you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's internet. We'll give you a promo code to give you some incentive, too. Promo code is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all items over all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Again, saving some money at Mississippi State's premier clothing, apparel, and mercantile-type operation in the universe. CampusBookmart.net, promo code BSR. All right, we did not get the result we wanted out in Hattiesburg. And I thought about this yesterday. You know, we had the bad start last year in Pearl against them. You know, Carson Ligon starts. We get down 4-0. We battle back and win the ball game. Charlie Foster will have better days than he had. And what's interesting, too, about this, he didn't get a lot of help from his defense. And that's kind of part of the deal. You know, when you got a young pitcher up there, you got to, you know, make plays behind him. But, not a great start, but not a terrible start either. But he comes out, you know, the Bulldogs, you know, only bring the minimum to the plate in the first inning. You get a walk and then a double play. Hall did a great job with the sinker. And then Ace Reese strikes out. You know, Ace and Sawyer both got off to good starts. Sawyer has not had a hit since the first at bat of the season. and then had a tough night in the field last night. And Reese, we still expect big things from him and Sawyer as well. But they've had a little difficult time adjusting. And then, you know, Charlie comes out and walks back-to-back hitters. So some self-inflicted wounds, probably some nerves there. Battles back, gets Nick Monster to strike out, and then you get the ground out back to the pitcher. If he gets it cleanly, it's probably a double play, probably a 1-6-3. But he didn't panic. He didn't find it right away. He picks it up. Throws the runner out at first. So now you got runners at second and third, and then you have a ball get loose at the plate, allows the run to score. I thought it was a wild pitch. They ruled it a pass ball. As a former catcher, I thought that was kind of a tough call, but the reality of it is Ross will tell you he probably should have kept that ball in front, and Charlie will tell you he probably should have done a better job. But nevertheless, run scores, and then he hits the next hitter on a 3-1 count, finally gets a pop-up to get out of it, but only gives up the one run, and you know, leadoff walks and two-out walks will kill you. Two-out walks are of the devil. Stay goes 1-2-3 in the second. And then Southern Miss comes in, and all of a sudden, you know, Charlie was really challenging hitters. Strikes out Barrett, and then gets into a 3-1 count with Joey Urban, who hits eighth in the order. And he hits a long home run to left center, makes it a 2-0 ball game. We bounce back, get Odom a strike out, and then we get the pitch we think we need to get out of the inning. Roll up a relatively routine ground ball to second, and Sawyer Reeves boots it. Well, then Higdon takes off to steal second. We've got him picked off. And then Charlie throws the ball away. It gets along the right field line. And because he has a head start, Higdon comes all the way around to score to make it a 3-0 ball game. And you think, okay, well, there's still plenty of ball game left. We just need to settle down. Bulldog bats never really got going. We did not get a hit, man. It was just nuts, man. It took us forever. Our first base runner, or I guess our second base runner, because we had that leadoff walk. You know, Cup gets on an error on the shortstop. And, you know, from there, it just kind of felt like, okay, we just need to manage the game and the bullpen, kind of hold it where it is until we can get caught up. Bullpen was outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And Ben Davis comes in, gets a 1-2-3 inning there in the third. Top of four, we go 1-2-3. Bottom of four, we get the first two guys out, and then Urban, who had a good night, first pitch, he doubles into right center. And that was the only two hits so far. We're down 3-0 in this ball game, and they got two hits. And that's what happens when you walk people and make errors. I mean, you know, that's not Mississippi State baseball. I mean, walks are part of the game, and sometimes there's going to be the you know, the athletic or physical error from time to time. But, you know, when you're playing, you know, a team like Southern Miss that's a quality team in their own backyard, you can't give them extra outs. We did, at least early on. But, yeah, the double doesn't come back to hurt us. Davis gets a routine ground out to short. I say routine ground out to short. Dylan Cup made it look routine. Kind of a slow chopper out to short. He barehands it and throws the runner out. And I thought they would review it. We saw the replay in the booth, and it really wasn't close. Top of five. They pull Allen, who was great. You know, former Starkville Academy pitcher. Weekend guy. You know, they throw a weekend guy. We throw a freshman. I know some people are like, oh, you know, it's so disrespectful. You guys, we gotta look at the big picture, okay? I hate to lose, certainly, an in-state game. But the reality of it is that we're not going to throw a weekend game in a midweek game. We're just not going to do that, nor should we. We get 1-2-3 in the fifth, and then you know, Davis, at this inning, I can tell it's maybe at the end of what he can provide at this point. He gets a ground out to short, and then, again, it's an error. Like, we roll up a routine ground ball to second, and then Sawyer throws it away, just kind of short arms it. Hines never has a chance. We have a chance to turn two, and then we don't get to turn there at second. Give up a single, back up the box. Ball was hit pretty well. Monister goes to third, but then Davis gets a strikeout to end all of that. So, you know, three innings of work there for Davis. You feel good about what he provided you. And again, just kind of holding the game where it is. Sometimes you just need a hold. And with two outs, Reeves was due up third in the inning. We put in Lucas Buckner. He's a guy that we've talked about extensively on the show with our coverage of Gene's page. We cover all the fall scrimmages and the preseason stuff. And we talked about what a dirtbag he is, and he is. And he comes in on an 0-1 pitch. He singles to the right side. Pretty good pace on it. I won't call it a C&I single because he struck it well. But extends the inning. Then Highfield hits an absolute shot to center, and it just kind of dies at the wall. And you kind of begin to wonder if that ball gets out of there, if we're having a different story today. Chances we may be. Well, Buckner stays in the game and plays second. We bring in Evan Sieri. Is a guy that didn't pitch a ton in the fall, and people were kind of concerned about that. He had a really good outing his final spring training appearance, and then he comes out here, gets a strikeout looking, fly out to short right, and then there's a single back up the middle, which proved to be Southern Miss's last hit of the ball game. And then Odom is hit by the pitch, so you think, oh my gosh, here we go. But give Sieri a lot of credit. He bears down, and on an 0-2 count, gets a comebacker to the mound and gets out of it with no damage done. Our top of the seven, they bring in Best in place of Culpepper, Chandler Best, and you absolutely hate this. I don't care who you cheer for, but if you love baseball, you hate to see this. And it felt like Chandler Best would have been warming up in the bullpen, you know, for three or four innings. You know, and of course, you know, Colby did a good job. And so they just kind of left him out there. And he goes out there to take his warm-up tosses and then calls a trainer out. And that's never good. Anytime you have to call a trainer out or a pitcher just walks off the mound, things are never good. And so they bring in Ock, who did a really good job. But, you know, State got some pretty solid contact on him. Ace flies out to left. And then Sullivan flies out to right. And then Hunter Hines singles through the shift. They're shifting over, but he hit it hard enough that he gets it through the three infielders to that side of the field. And then Chance comes up with a chance to extend the inning and then strikes out on three pitches. And, yeah, Bryce, a difficult guy to strike out. But that was a big moment there. Bottom of seven, we bring in Robert Fortenberry, a guy that hadn't pitched yet this year. Pitched extensively in the fall and the spring. In the spring, he was absolutely outstanding. In the fall, he was kind of up and down at times. Great in the spring. He gets a 1-2-3 inning here, and it's all relatively, you know, soft contact. And that's what you want. They got those three variations of the change. All right, in the eighth, and I felt like this was our best opportunity. And when we didn't score here, it just kind of felt like, you know what, this is not going to go the way we wanted to. Reed Stallman comes in, strikes out looking. Stevens then hammers a ball through the right side for a single. Cup flies out to right. And then Buckner, again, you know, the spark plug, singles back up the middle and really strikes it well. No one goes around to third. Now, it's runners at first and third, and you're thinking, man, a base hit here, and the ball's not really flying, but, you know, a base hit here, you get at least one. You get one in the gap. Buckner probably has a chance to score from first. And we get down 0-2, and then Heifel grounds one to the shortstop. They take the short route and force Buckner at second. And it really felt like then the game was over. We brought in Chase Hungate to get some work. He gets a ground out to third, and then it looked like it was going to be a routine ground out to second, but a CI is called. It's catcher interference. And so Pautau is given the bag, and then Barrett grounds into a double play on the next pitch. And really good job by Hungate, who throws a lot of sinkers and really keeps the ball down. You're going to hit the top half of the ball, so we're going to get under some bad angles with him and get a lot of ground balls. So, again, you know, bullpen outstanding here, but the Mississippi State offense just couldn't get anything going. They bring in Payne, and it's a 1-2-3 inning. He strikes out the side, and it was kind of apropos considering how the night went. But Bulldogs, you know, again, we lose this ball game and give Southern Miss credit for winning the game. But it wasn't like they put a ton of pressure on us. So much of this was kind of self-induced. I mean, you go back and you look at, you know, the walks and the errors ended up being a difference in the ballgame in many respects. And, of course, you're not going to beat anybody when you don't score. Urban hit the one home run, but you basically gift them two runs. So you had the two walks in the first inning and then a pass ball or a wild pitch, no matter how you're scoring it, gives them one. And then you have the pickoff throw go awry at inning two that allows a guy already in motion to come around and score. And that was with two outs. You know, and again, errors extend innings. Walks add stress to pitchers. You know, so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So again, you basically gift them two runs, but there's no difference between losing 3-0 and 1-0. It still counts the same in the standings. But it wasn't a good night. We actually had four hits. They had four hits. We had four errors, including the CI. But all of that was costly. And I've read some people, you know, they're being critical, you know. But here's the thing that I'll tell you about that is, you know, Chris Amonis pulled Sawyer Reeves after the second inning, the second error, and it puts Lucas Buckner in. And that's the thing that's different about this team than last year's team. Last year's team, you just kind of had to roll with it, right? Because you just didn't have anybody you could put out there. You played most of the year with, you know, 2.5 infielders in the middle infield. And with Lucas Buckner, a guy, even though he's a true freshman, this is a guy that kind of plays kind of above his means. You know, you don't expect a freshman to come in there in that situation. And he looked a little uncomfortable over the weekend. And I shared with you guys on the show, that's not the Lucas Buckner that we've seen. You know, I could tell he was pressing a little bit. He looked a lot more relaxed. His dad's a coach, so I'm sure dad got on the phone and said, hey, Lucas, just calm down. But, so you didn't just ride it out. I mean, you put Buckner in, and he ends up getting two of your four hits. And many of you are like, hey, well, he needs to start at second on Friday, and I have to agree. I think Sawyer Reeves is a great player. And Sawyer had a great fall and a great spring. But with the way he's struggling at the plate, you can ill afford to let him sit out there and hurt you on defense too. At least right now, we figure some things out. You know, it's one thing, you know, if you're hitting and not playing good defense, but you can't hit poorly and play poor defense. And he hadn't until now, to be fair to Sawyer. He's played a really good second base up until last night. And maybe he's just in his head a little bit about hitting, so maybe sitting a little bit this weekend will kind of get him going again. But this is Mississippi State baseball. It's never personal. We got to play the best nine that give us the best chance to win. Looking at the bullpen, and that's one thing that I have impressed upon you all throughout the fall and the spring is how good this bullpen can and I expect it to be. They worked seven innings last night and give up three hits. They strike out five and walk none. All right, the Mississippi State bullpen gave us an opportunity to climb back into this game, and the offense let us down. Simple as that. Colby Hall credited with the win. Worked four hitless innings. Halal just one base runner, and that was a walk to Sawyer Reeves to open the game. He eliminates that on a well-placed sinker that turns into a 6-4-3 double play. He strikes out five, throws 57 pitches. And, you know, Josh Ock, of course, that's the guy that came in place of Best due to the injury. You know, we get to him a little bit. You know, we get three hits on him. Just couldn't really bunch it together. And, of course, we have a little bit of a rally that starts there with two outs there in the eighth, and we're not able to get the big hit there. But, you know, Landon Payne comes in and kind of shuts the door on us. And, they did a good job. They pitched it well. And it's interesting, like I see people say, well, you know, our approach was bad. Well, tell me what our approach was, right? Sometimes we get this language kind of grinded in the gears, and we just don't know how to express our frustration. And so we just, you know, here's what I would say. We struck out 10 times, and it's never great to have double-digit strikeouts, but three of those come in the ninth. So basically it's less than an inning per, you know, when the game was kind of still on the line. So I don't think that's really the issue. You know, what I thought was the issue last night is they did a good job with those sinkers, and we didn't adjust enough at the plate to kind of move up in the box, and Lamona's kind of touched on that as well. But the game is behind us. We never expected to go undefeated. I mentioned this week if we could go 3-1 this week, that would probably be good. My hope was we'd beat Southern Miss and then win at least two this weekend, because I think that Southern Miss RPI is going to be very good. I really do. I think Southern Miss got a quality team this year. And, again, I got some texts today as well. They, you know, they treat it like a big game and we didn't. And here's the thing that I would say, and some people won't like this, and that's okay. It is a big deal for Southern Miss to beat us. And that's not me being disrespectful. You know, they are the mid-major team that's not going to have a lot of huge RPI opportunities. So they need to kind of go all out to win against a Southeastern Conference team. Not so much for us. Now, They got Louisiana Tech this weekend, who was another very solid mid-major. And, you know, I think given, you know, when you get down to it, Hall may be able to go a little bit on Sunday, you know, just throw him 57 pitches, probably get you an inning, maybe two. But, listen, Oz and those guys needed to come out and treat this like a big ball game. They did. And it was not an issue of us disrespecting them. It's just we're not going to go out there and throw a weekend guy on a Tuesday game at any point in the season, certainly not in the second week of the year. I know for those of you that live in the 601 area code, you don't want to have to hear about it, but this is a quality Southern Miss team. This isn't a bad loss because of the opponent. It's a bad loss because we did so poorly offensively. Now, that understood, I told you guys we're not going to tell a lot about our team based on the Manhattan game. It's because of the fact that they're not expected to be great, you know. But it's so funny. People are like, well, you know, we didn't hit the ball on Sunday either. Guys, it was 40 degrees. You know, and that's one of the things that I think about with Missouri State coming in this weekend. It's going to be cold in Stark Vegas. And so they are a launch angle team that kind of lives and dies by the home run. You know, I spoke to Coach Hawkins today, and he goes, you know, we can play a little small ball too, but that's not where their offense is built. And so when you get guys that are dropping that shoulder and swinging for the fence and trying to change a launch angle, you know, this weather could be a real factor. And, you know, the ball just didn't really travel when it's cold outside. And looking ahead to Friday, low of 19, high of 42. That game is currently scheduled for 4. I would move it up. That's just me. Saturday, a low of 26, a high of 48. And then Sunday, a low of 28 and a high of 53. And so it's not going to be a weekend where the ball is just jumping off the bat. And I think maybe that helps you from a pitching standpoint as well, because of the fact I think you'll be able to challenge hitters a little bit more. It gives you a little more margin for error when the air is a little bit thicker. So maybe playing Missouri State at this point is good. Now, Missouri State went 0-5 against SEC teams last year. They are picked to win the Missouri Valley this year. And a lot of that is kind of predicated on the fact that they've got one of the more experienced offenses in that league. They're going to start a freshman pitcher that played for Team Canada. He started last week and got a no decision. And I'm going to do my best to pronounce this name. And I joked with Coach Hawkins. I said, you're going to have to help me here because I won't even attempt this. And he laughed. And he pronounced it for me. I'm going to do my best. I know that's always a bit of a challenge on this show, but it's Michael Yusupchak, right-handed pitcher, 6'2", 250-pound right-hander from Edmonton, Alberta. He is the Friday guy they do expect at this point, based on where we sit today. They say we've got a couple bullpens that they had to work through just to kind of see how guys are bouncing back and if they'll be good to go. And again, the cold weather's not great. They're dealing with snow up there. But he is expected to be the Friday guy. Now, Jackson Holmes pitched on Saturday against Sam Houston State, and it did not go well. Jackson Holmes wears number 88. He goes 3 1/3 inning, gives up 6 hits, 6 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, and 4 extra base hits, 2 doubles, a triple, and a home run. Opponents are hitting 375, and it gets a small sample size. But it was not a good outing for him. And then they come back with the left-hander on Sunday, Tyler Charlton, who had the best outing of the three. He works 5 1/3 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 7 Ks, 3 walks. But, you know, pitching is kind of the question mark for this team. And I don't know if you guys are big fans of Sam Houston State baseball, but, you know, they used to be a team that they were a very, very solid mid-major. You know, and of course, you know, had some coaching changes and that kind of stuff since then. But, you know, you go up to Sam Houston State and you win those first series and you feel great about it. Well, then Sam Houston played Rice last night. Rice's team, he was 0-3 after the weekend at the Shriners Classic, and they win 6-1 against Sam Houston. So, you know, what are we expecting from Sam Houston this year? So, just like you can't tell a lot about Mississippi State from Manhattan, I don't know how much you can tell about Sam Houston. And Sam Houston did finish 10 games over 500 last year, but they did lose a lot too. And I think that's an important aspect of this thing. So we need you to be here, need you to bundle up. We need the Bulldogs to, we got to at least get two, but to kind of make up for Tuesday, ideally you want the sweep. And if you're like me, you expect Mississippi State, you want Mississippi State to win every game. We know that's not realistic. But the reality of it is that this Missouri Valley Conference League is kind of there for Missouri State's taking. So the more wins you can tack on them, the more you can ride that RPI wave with them later in the year. And again, it's a Missouri State team. It had some struggles last year, but it's a first year head coach, but he's been the hitting coach for the last few years, so he's familiar with the personnel. They're familiar with his hitting philosophy, so it's not like there's a lot of growing pains. These are people that have kind of grown into this throughout their college career. So we're going to see a veteran group of hitters, but from a pitching standpoint, that could be something that I think that we could exploit, even though it's not expected to be a great hitting day. You're going to have to play defense. And one of the things that jumped out, and we'll talk about them more on Friday's show, about this Missouri State team, again, being a former catcher, these are the kind of things that I look at. They had three stolen base attempts against Sam Houston State, and that's not many. It's one per game. They were thrown out all three times. And so they're not a team, I think, that is really going to stress pitchers in the running game. And so I think that gives you the ability to kind of lock in a little bit. And a lot of these offensive-minded teams, too, they don't want to run into an out, right? They feel like, hey, we can swing it, so we're just going to swing it and let it go. Last week against Sam Houston State, and again, this is a team that has finished in the top 20, I think, in home runs hit three consecutive years. They just hit two last week, two home runs, and they hit 274 as a team. And that Sam Houston pitching staff, again, you kind of don't know, kind of what to expect, from those guys. So opening weekend, just a couple of tanks. They could run into something down here. But, again, I think the better pitching plan and the better pitchers and the colder weather could be a factor in this ball game. I wonder a little bit about Carson Ligon against a team like this, a team that's used to kind of looking for that high heat. Because that's kind of what kind of his calling card, right, is to go 97, 98 upper in the zone. And when he's not able to locate that changeup, you can sit dead red against him. So I think he's the guy that you kind of got to worry about anyway because he hadn't really settled in. And if he has to be relying on the fastball early, they're going to be sitting on that. And, again, I think maybe the cold weather kind of helps him in that regard a little bit. But that's one of those things we always talk about. Baseball is about matchups. That's a matchup, but I don't know that favors us because of their offensive philosophy. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle if you're bringing a large group to town, whether it be a ball game weekend, a work event, maybe a work retreat, maybe it's a baby shower weekend, a bachelor party. I don't know your needs. We just want you to come here and have a good time. Be respectful of the place and of your neighbors, but I tell you, there's no better place to stay. I have stayed there. I'm not just whistling Dixie. I've spent, three nights up there. It was great. And six bedrooms, two baths, soon to be three. That great back porch area, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar. I did not partake. You may. But that back porch area is phenomenal. And there's the fire pit area, too. We put that thing to a lot of good use when we were out there. And it's quiet out there. It's out past the Highlands. You only got a couple neighbors. There's nobody on top of you. So it's not, an excuse for you to go out there and throw a rager. But it just kind of lets you know how calm it is. A lot of parking, right? Plenty of room to park. And I just encourage you, man, be the linchpin in your family or your friend group. You make the plans. Go ahead and say, hey, I've already checked in the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And they've got availability on this day and that day, and we want you to come with us. And let's all get together, bring all the cousins together, all the college roommates, whatever, and they'll accommodate you. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, and nothing is ever far here. But it'd be nice to be kind of tucked away, but at the same time, too, be close to all of your favorite places in the greater Starkville area. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page auto-populates, and you get the opportunity, of course, to peruse their pictures to see the amenities available to you and your guests. Also, some booking options will pop up. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. It's completely up to you. Maybe you've got a credit. But if you don't, let me give you one. book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. How about that? All right, as we mentioned earlier, Mississippi State picks up a big commitment, both figuratively and literally, if I can get it out, yesterday with Emmanuel Tucker from New Albany. Mississippi State now ranked the 13th class in the country. We expect that to change. But been some updates in the rankings. Now all of the players that are currently committed to Mississippi State have been rated. Cameron Brown comes in as an 87. Jaden Hill has been increased from an 85 to an 87, and I'm not going to stop until we get him 4 stars. Jaden Taylor was ranked earlier this week at 88. And Emmanuel Tucker comes in as your highest rated recruit with a 90, which is a 4-star with 247, and he is a 90.14 in the composite. So somebody out there has him as a 91, but pretty consistent as a 90 and a 4-star throughout the industry. Recently set up his official visit for June 20th. I think State will probably have, by the end of June, I think State's probably already going to have 15, 16, 17 commitments. And I think most of those commitments are going to come in the month of June during those official visit weekends. So getting Emmanuel now is big, and this is a commitment that comes of his own volition. He just decided it was time to shut it down. Very highly recruited guy. A lot of people thought that he may end up going to Miami. There was a push at sometimes to get him to transfer to IMG Academy out there. Living out there in Bradenton and having the opportunity to go to Miami, I'm sure they thought that would make good sense for them. But he elects to stay here at New Albany. We look forward to seeing him this season. But here's the offer sheet. Arkansas State, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, Houston, Louisiana, Louisville, LSU, Memphis, Miami, North Texas, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas A&M, among some smaller offers. But this is a guy that wanted to stay closer to home. Mom and dad are part of the decision-making process. But this is a good get for Mississippi State and a great win for Phil Loadholt, too. And I admire Phil's commitment GIF. Or Jeff, whatever you want to call, depending on your flavor. But he sends it out, and everybody's like, yeah, Loadholt's happy. And it's so big, too. It was a guy that speaks directly to recruits as regularly as I do. Phil Loadholt's name gets mentioned the most, right? And let me tell you why that's significant. There are a lot of times that I will interview these guys, well, who is your guy? Who's been recruiting you? And it takes them a second to kind of figure it out. Oh, let me check my messages, or let me check my phone, and let me see. So what that tells me is maybe they don't have a serious interest in us, or perhaps maybe we hadn't made a strong impression yet. It's just not the case with Phil Loadholt. Of course, he's a guy that has credibility in the room because he's played at the highest level. He also is a guy that clearly does a good job delivering his message, because when these young linemen that we talk to would say, hey, well, who was the coach that came out? Coach Loadholt. Yeah, they know. And so you knew, and Jeff Levy said that when I interviewed him. One of the things that he loves about Phil Loadholt is he's not scared to swing for the fences. And we need people like that at Mississippi State that don't just accept the natural order of things. And you get to Mississippi and you find out, hey, this is a guy that's, within an hour and a half or so of our campus that has all of these Power Four offers. He has NFL quality size. He has NFL potential. Well, I played in the National Football League, so I'm going to go get him. And then he does. This is a very significant development, not just because it's a position of need and it kind of establishes Loadholt's credibility within the fan base as a recruiter. And everybody used to talk about that when I do these interviews. Man, Loadholt always gets mentioned. There's a reason for that, right? It just kind of shows that he's doing a really good job of kind of making these young people feel like a priority to him. And that matters. He's the guy that's going to be coaching them. But also, too, it is a big in-state win. And how many times do we hear about this, right? Well, a lot of the best players in Mississippi leave the state. Well, Emmanuel Tucker is the number 8 player in the state. And he is the first of the top 10 to commit. And so a good start for State in that respect. And again, 7 commitments right now. Do we expect to stay in the top 15? No. because I don't think there's enough star power in the state for that. It is a great year in state, though, but I think us and Ole Miss are going to split some, and you're going to have some, you know, big-name guys leave the state, like Tristan Keys, the number one prospect, the five-star overall. You know, back-to-back years, the state of Mississippi has produced five-star receivers, and we didn't get Caleb Cunningham, and we're not going to get Tristan Keys. So that's a very frustrating part of it. Braylon Womack is a guy, if he elects to stay in state, I think state actually has a pretty good chance with him. I just don't know if he's going to stay in state. Xavier McDonald, of course, Pooh Man as they call him, doesn't do a ton of media. He's kind of a quiet kid, a little bit shy. But, man, on the field, this guy can really, really play. That's one to watch. Nolan Wilson's kind of like that, too, from Picayune. Just doesn't do a lot of media. And you watch his film, he's a very violent player. And Demarius Yates, former Mississippi State commitment, really like him a lot. But I don't expect State to take two running backs in the class. I think we're completely happy with J.J. Hill and with so many backs from the last class. And the fact that you've got Fluff, right, who's going to be a sophomore, and you bring in two freshmen. I don't think it has to be a two-back class unless you get to the end of this process and maybe somebody is looking to leave, or perhaps somebody gets injured and you're like, okay, we got to go get a portal guy as a stopgap guy. I think it's going to be a one running back class. Jarellen McCoy is at number six. I like Jarellen, but I'll be honest with you. I think he's a little overvalued at six. It's funny, the first time that I saw him, he told me that there wasn't 27 edge rushers in the country better than him. He may prove to be correct. I did watch him play against Whitehaven. It was early in the season. I need to go back and watch some more film from him. But, you know, he committed to LSU early and backed off of that one. I don't think that he is going to be a Bulldog when all said and done. Tylen Wilson out of Pascagoula, really like him a lot too. Four-star guy, and I think that he is a guy that's going to do some impressive things when it's all said and done. Of course, Emmanuel Tucker, we've already announced, and Preston Ashley is the final four-star in the group. I think I could make a case for maybe a dozen guys in this class to be four-stars. Right now there's nine, and Preston Ashley is one of them, and that's a guy from Brandon High School. And I think of the big-name DBs, you know, Wilson and Ashley are probably, and I hate to use the word probable, let me just say, I think Mississippi State is in better standing with them than Braylon Womack and I'm missing one. But nevertheless, I think State will be in the mix there. And a lot of people want to know Amari Johnson. A lot of people want to know, you know, Steve, what's next? I really like where State sits with Gavin Howard, too, out of Holmes County Central. Now, you know, one thing that I think about, you know, Corey Ellington came here and had a good experience. You know, he got in the portal, elected to get back out, stayed at State. I really like Corey a lot, and he was a guy that wanted to be at Mississippi State. And, of course, Kamari Rogers comes here and ultimately leaves and goes to Jackson State because he wants to get on the field, you know. And I admire that decision. Let me tell you why. Okay, so he leaves. He goes to Miami, and he's hurt again, unfortunately. He's a great young man. Comes to State, still not quite 100%. They let him redshirt that year, and certainly he will be eligible for a medical redshirt when it's all said and done. But, you know, I think what Kamari has done, go to Jackson State, show people what you can do. Go get on the field, put some numbers out there, and then maybe you get in the portal again next year, and you get another chance at the Power 5, or you get a chance at a very solid G5 program, and then you kind of work your way back up the ladder of awareness when it comes to NFL players. I think he's a guy that if he wants to play on the next level, has got to get on the field. And I think it's a smart decision to kind of drop down to ensure that happens. Makes perfect sense to me. He's had 3 years now, and two of those he hadn't had a chance to play a whole lot. Played a little bit for us last year, but he has got to get on the field. And so I support that. But you kind of wonder, you know, Cortez Thomas last year was leaning to Mississippi State, and then on July 3rd, elects to pick Ole Miss, and, you know, it's just kind of interesting. You know, how does that play into this? How close are those guys? I really appreciate that Holmes County program. Coach Riders has been great to me over the years. I've been to see them play, I think, 5 years in a row, and they do a good job, and they always seem to have skill guys offensively and defensively. And so I think you could do worse
than signing a player from Holmes County Central every single year. So that's your kind of your recruiting update. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You can order a signed copy of The Dude. All my sports titles are there as well, including When the Bottom Falls, which is not a sports title, even though there is some sports mentioned in it. It's my book of recovery. If you're a person that's in recovery or need to be in recovery, or you know somebody in recovery or needs to be in recovery, it may be a book that helps you kind of, you know, develop some understanding about it all. You can find that there as well. And we'd love for you to come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. That's an important aspect, too. We have a lot of student athletes that come. It's not just for athletes. It's for everybody. And nothing has done more for my anxiety than floating regularly. And so I encourage you to come experience the magic of floating. And you'll walk out of there and you'll feel like a different person. It gives your mind a chance to rest, gives your body a chance to kind of heal itself. So if you're a person that suffers with anxiety or chronic pain, we may be able to help you. And in addition to that, maybe you don't suffer with any of those things. Maybe you just need a break, right? You just need a little peace and quiet, some time to yourself. We can help you with that too. Dial 662-268-7601, and Dana can answer all your questions. As simple as that. She's a registered nurse too, you know, so she's, you know, she knows a little bit about the medical profession after spending over a decade as a registered nurse. And so we brought this place to Starkville to make Starkville a better place. And we believe we're doing that kind of one float at a time. And I just encourage you, if you haven't tried it, you deserve an opportunity to do it for yourself. And it may become a regular part of your life. And we certainly hope that's the case. And always come join us over at jeanspage.com. Reminder for new and returning customers, 1 month for a buck. 1 month for a buck. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.